The Student of the Game presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius!
Here's to you, Mr. Pious Spiritual Leader.
Mr. Pious Spiritual Leader!
When the Broncos were 1-4, they needed a savior. Who knew that their savior would be someone who had actually read the Bible?
Thank God for this touchdown!
Your highest completion percentage in a game this year? 66.7. Number of teammates inspired? 100%.
We'll all play hard Sunday!
People say that your pass delivery is slow, but you take your team to the fast track to miracle victories.
God bless overtime!
So here's to you, O Friar of the Fourth Quarter. It may take the devil himself to stop you. That or Bill Belichick.
Mr. Pious Spiritual Leader.
Student of the Game. Liberator Network. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to a very extra special wild card edition of the Student of the Game. I'm Kyle, the Student of the Game. To my right, Chris Weasel, ready to bring you playoff action for the first time this season. Although there's been plenty of preview, there are actual playoff games in the books, stuff to get excited about. But first, a few bit of pieces for the homeroom segment here. Speaking of teams that were in the playoffs, at least last year, the Chiefs have made it official. No longer does Romeo Crennel have the interim title on his team anymore. He is the head coach for the Kansas City Chiefs. So I'm going to bring this one directly to you, Weasel, with this context in mind. Last year, probably around this time, Brad Childress was given the axe. Chili himself cut on the strength of, first of all, a less than stellar performance on his end, which is different than Todd Haley, the former Chiefs coach. But the players didn't really care for him, and he was ousted in favor of Leslie Frazier. How do you think the situation with Crennel would be different from Leslie Frazier?
With Crennel?
Yeah.
What does Crennel have to do with the...
The former defensive coordinator being rallied by the players to be the coach, a lot like Leslie Frazier was for the Vikings. Do you think...
Well, I think kind of the difference, they did rally behind him, but the Chiefs did get a couple big wins to end the season, and they're in good shape. So, I mean, and Crennel is a little bit more, established than Frazier, who was a defensive coordinator.
Excellent points right there, so. Yeah. I said the same thing actually talking with Tom Kernan and Phil Russell on WTMY.com today myself when I called in. So, yeah, great football minds on that one. So as far as that goes, it'll be very interesting to see. Another thing worth mentioning, the NFC North, much more difficult division than the AFC West. Romeo Crennel's chances of success thusly increased because of that. And staying in the AFC West, very relevant of late, Josh McDaniel officially announced to replace Bill O'Brien, who is now the Notre Dame head coach. Now,
Penn State.
Or Penn State, the Notre Dame. Penn State head coach. I got Charlie Weiss in my head, apparently. Penn State head coach. And apparently, Josh McDaniel, however, in a very unorthodox situation, will be coaching in the playoff game Sunday. We'll probably talk a lot about that a little bit more in depth, but something I don't think we talked about, why would you take the Penn State job if you're Bill O'Brien even at all? I mean, I'll answer you that for what the only theory I can come up with, three times as much in salary. That's about it.
I was going to say college girls.
Okay, fair enough. He's there for the scenery, folks, and he's not talking about the hills. Well, maybe he is talking about the hills in State College. Let's play a game, honey. It's called Find the Hidden Valley. And anyway, so that'll take care of that. Also, in other news, you gentlemen familiar with the UFL, who once had a Florida franchise here, the Florida Tuskers, that became the Virginia Destroyers in 2011. Why is that significant? Great point. Gentlemen.
He's saying Destroyer got... destroyed. It was in the season.
No, actually, they won the championship in the UFL, so that's an unfortunate thing. But it would mark the first championship for a coach who's written off as someone who can't win the big game. More specifically, Marty Schottenheimer. Marty Schottenheimer getting phone calls from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as a potential coaching prospect. Thoughts, feelings, opinions?
Yeah, it would work.
There's worse ideas out there.
Yeah, the worst idea is Childress. Yeah, Childress.
For one. That's awesome.
Says the Vikings fan.
Right, and then also, who else we're interviewing? Some other washed-up coach, I thought.
Well.
Mike Sherman.
Oh, right, the former Packer coach. Yeah, right. They were looking at that, which I think would...
Just got fired from Texas A&M.
Which would be a ridiculously bad idea, if you ask me. But enough with the homeroom segment. Let's go ahead and move on to the games themselves. Featured games, all of them, because there's only four playoff games. So let's get underway. The first game of the playoff round this week were the Bengals visiting the Houston Texans. The Texans hosting their first ever playoff game, home or away, in franchise history. And the Texans and the very psyched up, very stoked in this game. The crowd became a factor, and I'll get into how later. But while the first half was pretty close, the game got blown up at the end. The crowd getting involved. The Texans winning their first franchise playoff game over the Bengals 31-10. Similar in fashion to how they won their first regular season game when they first opened as a franchise. Here they are, 11 years later, first playoff victory. 1-0 playoff record. Looking to the stats, T.J. Yates, monster game, Tebow-esque, more on that later, 11-20, 55%, 159 yards, with a touchdown. Andy Dalton, the Red Rifle and, well, regular season Rookie of the Year candidate for offense, 27-42, 64%, 257 yards, with three, count them, three interceptions. Made the difference in the game outright. I could go into stats about third down percentage and all this other stuff, but when you're in a playoff game and you have three turnovers and they have zero, game over. Ryan Leonard led the rushing attack for the Bengals in an effort to try to keep it balanced. Wasn't really successful. Three runs, 14 yards, 4.1 a carry, and Cedric Benson had 7 for 14, did manage a touchdown on his two.
Ryan Leonard had 3 for 34.
Okay, I can't read my writing.
11.3.
Well, at any rate, not a whole lot of running yards contributed on the ground. 3 for 34. Yeah, I think you're right. I think I wrote it wrong. Anyways, nonetheless, Cedric Benson managing the touchdown on the ground. And on the ground, big factor there. One, Arian Foster, the Arian Nation, invading the Bengals defense. 24 carries, 153 yards, 6.4 a carry with two touchdowns. No, I didn't mess that up, did I?
No.
Okay. Ben Tate, 9 carries, 36 yards, 4.25 a carry. So a whole lot of running effect for the Texans. Basically a pretty balanced attack. More runs than passes, obviously. But, yeah, the momentum changer, we mentioned the three interceptions earlier. Defensive tackle, J.J. Watt, intercepts the ball from the line and takes it in for a touchdown. Now, this isn't the kind of thing where it was tipped first. I mean, it kind of was. But, like, he leaps up, gets a hand on it, and it kind of sticks in the air to his hand somehow. I don't know. I heard him in the interview on the Dan Patrick show earlier this morning, and he claims that these are gloves that he's used, like, 8 or 9 weeks already. So it's not like they're brand-new gloves out of the box, all the C-tack and stickiness all, you know, established on the gloves. It just stayed there. Then he comes up with the other hand, makes it more like a really strange, you know, basketball rebound. Like, all the times you see those balls bat at the line of scrimmage, where then, you know, you see him bat at the line of scrimmage, you're like, oh, if he was ready for it, he could have caught it. Well, it actually happened this time. And when that took place, the team, the crowd, the environment was electric in favor of the Texans, and all Andy Dalton could do was roll his eyes. Now, for me, it really wasn't Andy Dalton's fault, because the O-lineman, when you see a D lineman jump up, aren't you supposed to just, you know, smash him right in the chest right then and send him flying to the turf on his tailbone so he doesn't do it anymore? That's what I remember seeing done. I don't know.
The guy was there. The offensive lineman was already blocking him, so his hands were already on him. It was just
But his hands weren't on him. He was pass blocking and he was, you know, hitting back.
Right, it was just one of those quick release. Just touched his hand. It was just. Yeah. I mean, it was kind of thrown. It looked like he was throwing an out pattern, or something, or a hitch or something. But it was like right to him. But that's what you call soft hands.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, I'm sure all the ladies are happy to see him. Anyways, no. But all that aside, so he makes this interception for a touchdown. They go up 17-10 at the time. The crowd goes absolutely ape. They're still into it going into the third quarter because this happened basically right at the end of the second. The crowd's into it at third quarter. The early third quarter, their first drive, they're in their own territory. First of all, 12 men on the field called. 12 men in the huddle. Then the next play, a false start. They got first and 20 in their own territory to start the third quarter. Andy Dalton, from that point on, for the rest of the game, because the crowd was involved and because he's a rookie, in my opinion, couldn't get anything going. And that's why, in the second quarter, the competition, so to speak, was completely useless. So, anyways, one big play by one big man got a fat guy spike. He didn't really do a fat guy dance, but turned the momentum of the game in its entirety. We'll see the Texans in the next round facing off against the Ravens. Anyways, going to the NFC, the next game of the week was the Lions visiting the Saints in New Orleans at the Superdome. No one shocked here. All three of us picked the Saints big. Some people tried to say it would be close. Some delusional people actually picked the Lions. Well, no, we were right all along. 45-28 Lions. Excuse me, Saints. Although I will admit the game was closer than the score indicates. Matt Stafford, 28 for 43, 65%, 380 yards, 3 touchdowns. Not a bad stat line until we get to 2 interceptions. Drew Brees, 33 for 43, 77%, 466 yards, 3 touchdowns. Also managed to fumble, and the Saints on offense having, I believe it was 5 or more plays, 30 yards or greater.
Hey, how many yards did you say Stafford had?
380.
Okay.
So, Anyways, going to the ground game for the Lions, Kevin Smith made an appearance, though not too much of one. 6 carries for 21 yards, 3.5 a carry. And Stafford did run in one of his touchdowns, so he did account for 4 touchdowns total on the day. Interesting note, although it was for naught, the Lions, 100%, 4 red zone trips, 4 touchdowns. Unfortunately, the Saints' offense was balanced. You saw that Drew Brees had 466 yards. Now here's the running stats. Pierre Thomas, 8 carries for 66 yards, 8.25 a carry with a touchdown. Where the hell was that during the fantasy season, right? No points for Chris here. Darren Sproles, 10 carries, 51 yards, 5.1 a carry, but 2 touchdowns. And Chris Ivory had 13 for 47 himself. So that's a lot of contribution. And that balanced offense is what kept the defense of the Lions unbalanced or off balance, however you want to put it. At any rate, in the air, the big force for the Lions, no big shot there. Megatron himself, 12 catches, 211 yards, 2 touchdowns. Will Heller had a touchdown on the day on a 10-yard catch, but no one else really worth mention. So if Calvin Johnson is Megatron, does that mean Drew Brees is Optimus Prime? I'm just throwing that out there. Yeah?
Good call.
Maybe? Anyways. So while he did have a fumble on the night, Marquise Colston, 7 catches, 120 yards. Robert Meacham, 4 catches for 111 with a touchdown. Devery Henderson, 2 catches for 64 yards with a touchdown. And then Jimmy Graham, of course, contributing his touchdown on a 7 catch, 55-yard night. I mentioned before the balance on offense being heavily in favor of the Saints and also leading to a better than 15-minute time of possession advantage. Really not a whole lot you can do against that. You know, I mean, it's ironic. I would say that God couldn't even help you against the Saints. Gentlemen, I have a very interesting question for you, though. It just came to me right here as we're recording this, so I'll go ahead and ask you.
Pop quiz.
Pop quiz for sure.
Pop quiz.
Who has the advantage in a game where Tebow is playing against the Saints? Weasel.
Say, of course, the Saints. I mean, putting up points on the board is what matters against Tebow. It's like it's tough for him to keep up, I would think.
Chris.
If you're thinking of, you know, religious wise, Saints are dead, so it'd be Tebow.
And you tell me I have no sense of humor, Weasel. I'm just saying. There you go. I would have gone with the living incarnate myself, you know, because, well, yeah. Anyways, we'll leave it at that. Also, Willis McGahee being documented as being one who calls Tebow baby Jesus. I mean, it leads for a conflict of interest with the heavenly and celestial bodies. I'm just saying. Anyways, speaking of things that weren't very celestial at all, this game was pretty rough and brutal, especially if you happen to be a Falcon fan. Chris, bring it.
The Giants had 6 yards of total offense in the first quarter and part of the second when their D stepped up big and the offense started rolling to a 24-2 victory over the Falcons. Yes, Eli was called for intentional grounding in the end zone. It wasn't a sack.
Right.
So the Giants scored all 26 points.
So the Giants scored all 26. I like that.
For the Falcons, Matt Ryan, 24 for 41, 59%, 199 yards, no touchdowns, no INTs. He was sacked twice. For the Giants, Eli Manning was 23 for 32, 72%, 277 yards, three touchdowns, no INTs.
Pop quiz for you, Chris. Matt Ryan in this game, did he look like Matty Ice or Natty Ice?
He looked more like Natty Ice.
All right, there we go. So if you were drinking the Tebow juice this weekend, more on that later, you know, have another drink to go with that, some nice cold Natty Ice.
And for the ground game, Michael the Sizzle Turner, because he couldn't get it going, 15 for 41, 2.7. And for the Giants, Brandon Jacobs, 14 for 92. 6.6 a carry, and Ahmad Bradshaw, 14 for 63, 4.5 a carry.
I guess we can't make jokes referring to smoke when it comes to the burner turner, because LeGarrette Blunt, you know, has already reserved the smoke jokes.
All right.
So I see what you're doing. I like that. The sizzle.
Burner, sizzle.
Yeah, no, I'm feeling that.
I like that one.
The sizzle?
Yeah.
See, sizzle. Now we talk about Terrell Suggs, though. That whole teasel sizzle thing might get awkward, but I like Michael the burner turner better anyway. Or, you know, maybe he's Michael the Flamer Turner now, since he didn't. I'm throwing it out there.
Michael the Skidmark Turner?
Something.
If it's burning, you know, fast speed or whatever, it's more like Skidmark because he gets stopped.
We'll work on it. We'll work on it.
Through the air for the Falcons, rookie Julio Jones, 7 for 64. Roddy White, 5 for 52. And Tony Gonzalez, 4 for 44. And for the Giants, Hakeem Nicks had 6 for 115 with two touchdowns. He had a long of 72. And Mario Manningham had 4 for 68. With a touchdown.
You know, we make a note earlier. Hakeem Nicks, you said, had two touchdowns. And I think I texted you earlier. I wanted to share this with everybody. This is what happens when Hakeem Nicks actually catches the ball. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Big difference in the game. I mean, you can look at the 9 minutes of, you know, time of possession. Third down, 4 for 14 for the Falcons, 8 for 15 for the Giants. That's 29% to 53%. Fourth down, the Falcons were 0 for 3. Take away the last one for because it was the last play of the game. They're trying to go somewhere.
Right.
Or last play for them. Big difference was when the Falcons went for it on the fourth down, they got stopped twice on fourth and short.
Two words, gentlemen, and I know you probably already know what I'm going to say. Play action. Come on. I mean, even after you get stopped the first time, you don't even think of it.
Well, the very next play after they got stopped on the first time, it was a safety.
Well, yeah.
But it was the second time when it was fourth and inches and they have an empty backfield.
Right.
That they get, you know, they just got...
Well, let it be an empty backfield. I mean, look, if you have Tony Gonzalez out there, Hall of Fame, future Hall of Fame tight end, number two in receptions all time currently, and you don't think to get him involved on any sort of play action or fake or deception... Even with an empty backfield, I'm saying, right?
It was fourth and inches. The score was 10-2.
Mm-hmm.
Could have kicked the field goal. It could have been 10-5.
Yeah.
You know, at that time,
nothing beats good old fashioned points.
The Giants stopped them. They're idle. You're on the way. You know. Oh yeah, you should go for it. You know what? You need to. It was early in the third quarter. Get the points. The Giants came right down the field, scored a touchdown, was up 17-3.
Yeah. 2.
Or 17-2. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, hey, look, I'm all a fan for going for it on fourth and one, but if you're starting to get predictable with it, then you don't serve the purpose. I mean, what was it? He had 3 fourth-down attempts that were fourth and short, or is it?
No, there was two of them. The last one was fourth and like 10 or 20 or something.
I remembered it being 3. Okay, but I know they
were 0 for 3 at fourth down.
Right. The last one was long. Well, no, I remember three of them where there were two quarterback sneaks, but I'm getting it wrong. So, yeah, it's a quarterback sneak, that field. Then you decided to hand it to the burner and fail. I mean, yeah, whatever. It's a whole lot of fail. I don't know if you have the stat on yours as well, but I'm going to throw it out there. 247 yards in total offense versus 442.
Right, just kind of skipped over that.
Yeah, but that's damn near 200 yards of offense in difference.
0 for 1 in the red zone, 1 for 3.
Mm-hmm.
The 0 for 1 was because they went for it instead of kicking the field goal.
Right. So, right. And so, anyways, if we're done with that, let's head over to really the only close game in terms of the score for the weekend, where the Pittsburgh Steelers went mile high to face off against the Denver Broncos. Weasel.
In a game where both teams were getting questionable calls and no calls by the refs, the Broncos made more plays to win. The Broncos, at home, defeated the Steelers 29-23 in overtime. For the Steelers, Big Ben Roethlisberger was 22 of 40, 55%, 289 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 INT. He was sacked 5 times and had 3 scrambles for 15 yards. In the running game, with Rashard Mendenhall out, Isaac Redman filled in nicely. He had 17 rushes for 121 yards, 7.1 average. Wide receiver Mike Wallace had a 1-yard touchdown run on a reverse. In the receiving game, Emmanuel Sanders had 6 catches for 81 yards. Antonio Brown had 5 for 70. Tight end Heath Miller had 5 for 60. Jericho Cotchery had a 31-yard touchdown reception. And Mike Wallace was held to 3 for 26.
Yeah, that's kind of a big deal there, too. I mean, I don't know that you marked it in here, too. You mentioned Roethlisberger as well. Did you do the running game yet? I missed it.
Yeah.
You mentioned Roethlisberger in there, too. And if you didn't, I'm going to anyway. There was at least one play I remember in particular where he ran like 10 yards-ish to get a first down with a bad ankle.
With a high sprain, yeah.
Tenacious! Yeah, tenacious! Anyways.
Deal. For the Broncos, passing, Tim Tebow was 10 of 26, 38.5%, 316 yards, which is 31.6 yards per completion. 2 touchdowns, no INTs. He had 10 scrambles for 50 yards and a rushing touchdown. Big stat here, he was not sacked.
Now, that is a huge stat. I mean, where was Lawrence Timmons? Where was James Harrison? Where was Lamar Woodley? Where are they?
Well, they
no sacks. Brett Kiesel. Any of them? Anybody?
I think they had a couple injuries on the defensive line. And okay. I think Kiesel was out early.
Well, Ziggy Hood, I know, was in question.
Yeah. So they had some injuries on the offensive and the defensive line, but still, yeah. No. The linebackers were.
Ziggy Hood played.
Okay, well, Marquise Pouncey was definitely missing for the offense, too.
Kiesel did not record a stat, so...
Yeah, okay. He was out, and he's like one of their big guys out
yeah,
there.
Yeah, definitely, and not just because he has a wonderful beard.
Yeah, so for the rushing game, Willis McGahee lost a crucial fumble in the fourth quarter that led to a Steelers touchdown, and he did have 19 rushes for 61 yards, 3.2 average. Lance Ball had 4 for 11. Receiving game... Demaryius Thomas had 4 catches for 204 yards when a touchdown. Tight end Daniel Fells had 2 for 57.
See, I figured you were going to do this. 204 yards.
Yeah.
200.
Yep.
And 4 yards. On yep. 10 catches, you said?
4.
4 catches.
4 catches?
51-yard yeah. average.
That's good.
Retarded!
Well, he had a long of 80.
I mean, you're wasting my... I shouldn't say wasting my time. That's not right. But you're telling me about Tebow having 31.6 yards a carry. You're getting all numerology
31.6
on me. Thank you. Yeah. I got that wrong. You're getting all numerology on me with the 316s and all this other stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, you don't mention 51 yards a catch. I'm just
he
saying.
He had an 80-yarder, so.
Okay. And
if
let's
you take that out.
If you take that out.
He still had 124 yards on 3 catches.
Which is?
Still 40. 41.
Yeah.
A little bit better than 41. More than 31.6, I might add. Go ahead, Weasel.
41.33.
Eddie Royal had 3 for 49 with a touchdown.
I'm sorry, Eddie Royal?
Eddie Royal, 3 for 49 with a touchdown, and one of the Broncos' top wide receivers, Eric Decker, left the game with what ended up being a sprained MCL or in the second quarter. Don't think he's going to play against...
He's questionable for next week's game.
Day-to-day,
they think it's a sprained MCL, but they had MRIs today.
He ain't playing.
Right. They confirmed the MRI.
He ain't playing.
Yeah.
He is not playing. He's not going to be a factor at all.
Doesn't matter.
Anyways.
Now, as for the refereeing for the game, I would say that they got the challenges right. The drop by Mike Wallace, I think that was right. It hit the turf. The Isaac Redman almost hit the goal line. It wasn't a touchdown. He was short.
Okay.
And so the challenges, I mean, I think they got pretty much right.
The plays that were challenged, they were called sustained and rightfully so.
Yeah, that Mike Wallace one, that was a long play, though, wasn't it?
It was a long play, yeah. But I think when he was coming down, I think the nose of the ball
He trapped it.
He trapped it, yeah. We didn't have... The ball's allowed to hit the turf, but he didn't have control of it, so... Now, as for the flags, or lack thereof, it was kind of awful for both teams. Now... First half, the helmet-to-helmet hit was on a wide receiver for the Steelers.
There was no call. Yeah, and who was... I know the play you're talking about, too.
I believe it was Mike Wallace, maybe.
Yeah, he got blasted, I think it was by Von Miller, as a matter of fact, over the middle of there. Helmet-to-helmet hit, sure enough, no call. But people, see, and the Steelers get attacked for declaring that they that they're targeted. But then Mike Wallace gets crushed. I don't think Von Miller's getting a fine check in the mail.
Yeah, he was, I think, he was leading with the helmet, too. And yeah. I mean, it was a big hit. And none of the announcers said anything.
Okay.
It was like a great hit by him, and it's like, ugh.
Let me slow this down on you. There's nothing wrong with big hits. I know you're just saying there's nothing wrong with big hits. Right. If it's helmet to helmet, where's the flag on that? I'm not saying it was like, you know, Colt McCoy bad, but
his shoulder would be different, but yeah, it was.
Well, actually, it doesn't matter. If you make contact with the helmet, forget about it.
Right. So, now, there were questionable defensive pass interference calls. There was one against the Steelers on a throw that seemed to be uncatchable, and on a Broncos drive that ended on a field goal.
But give us the most egregious one.
Now, one thing that they didn't do was they didn't call any holding calls in the whole game. That was kind of weird.
That's not the most egregious one, but that is worth mentioning. No, I didn't catch that.
Well, early in the fourth quarter.
Here we go.
Steelers got away with one. When the refs blew the whistle, which, when the whistle's blown, the play is dead.
Well, why did the ref blow the whistle?
Well, because there was a pass backwards. It was when a pass is thrown backwards, it was to Mike Wallace.
Or laterally.
And the receiver doesn't catch it, or if it hits the ground, it's a fumble. It's a live ball.
Mm-hmm.
But so in this instance, Big Ben turned, and he threw the pass low and backwards to Mike Wallace. Ball hit the turf, bounced around, and the Broncos recovered it. Problem is the ref blew the whistle, so the play was...
Well, why did he blow the whistle?
Well, he thought it was an incomplete pass.
He was indicating an incomplete pass, right. And to quote the immortal Phil Simms, who gave us this important piece of wisdom, in order for it to be a forward pass, the pass has to be going forward. Yes. Precise quote, by the way. Weasel will vouch.
Yes, exactly.
So, and in order to win the game, you have to have more points than the other team.
Thanks, John Madden. So, after a Steelers touchdown, tied the game at 23 with 3:48 remaining, Broncos got the ball at their own 15-yard line. They converted the first down, but that was it. They had to punt it away. Steelers had a shot with 1:37 remaining, but that came to nothing as Broncos defensive end Elvis Dumervil forced a fumble that sacked Big Ben for 11 yards when the Steelers were approaching field goal position.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because that deal, huge!
Yeah. The Broncos got the ball first in overtime and wasted no time, literally. After a touchback, the first play of overtime had a Steelers safety cheating up towards the line to stop the run on a short pass.
Let me correct you in one place. Both Steelers safeties cheating up.
Yeah. And Tebow made them pay as he hit Demaryius Thomas, the guy who had 204 yards, on a post route to the middle of the open field as he stiff-armed the defender.
Ike Taylor.
No. After his performance in this game, not just on this play, Ike Christmas Tree Taylor. Dude got lit up.
You earned that nickname.
Just saying.
And he took to the house 80 yards for the touchdown. Game over.
So, yeah. And actually, in news that surfaced today, Ike Taylor did really bad. He even apologized for his performance in the game. Steeler Nation, of course, supporting him thoroughly, but not one of his better games in his career. I think it might be time for him to move to free safety himself. Who knows?
He did lead the team with tackles for the game. Just couldn't get the important one.
Because they were picking on him.
Well, right. He led the team in tackles because he couldn't cover a defender. Correct. Well stated,
I'm
Weasel.
I'm surprised you didn't bring up that one about they called a pass interference call on the Broncos that they settled for a field goal. Yeah. On a screen, they threw the flag after the guy has the ball in his hand. They threw the flag way late, and they said it was in the end zone.
Okay.
A pass interference in the end zone when they're on the 15-yard line, and the guy got a first down inside the 5, and they threw the flag. As you can see, he's running with the balls when they threw the flag.
Wow, that's weird.
And they had to settle for a field goal instead of the touchdown right there.
That's bad.
Yeah.
But
anyway, going out there, Broncos on first down for the game. At 10 first downs during the game, well, at least started possessions. This is 10 started possessions. I didn't do all the first downs.
Right.
9 runs, 1 pass before the overtime.
Wow.
The opening, every time they started with possession.
So
and big difference in the game right here. Well, two. One, Steelers missed Mike Pouncey. Marquise Pouncey. Marquise Pouncey, yeah. Right.
Their center in there.
Yeah, they missed him, and then two, you know, the whole offensive line for the Broncos.
Well, that and the high ankle sprain, I mean, let's call it what it is. Not to mention if the center's out, the calling of the blocking schemes falls on that center.
But do you bring that high ankle sprain on Tomlin for starting playing?
Oh, no, no, you had to play Roethlisberger.
No, not today. I meant against the Browns and against the Niners.
He had to play that game against the Niners. Charlie Batch would have been murdered. I'm sorry.
It's one of those. You're already in the playoffs.
Playoffs.
You're already in the playoffs. You're trying to go for home field advantage. Yeah, I can see that. But you know what? You need to have health going into the playoffs. They were last year. They were number 5 seed, weren't they?
Five seed.
Last year.
I don't remember.
I think they were number 5 seed last year and still made it to the Super Bowl. They're a good away team in the playoffs.
No, that's true.
So what you have a history against the Niners, you should have just, with him with the high ankle sprain, you should have just had him, let him rest it, rest of the season. You already made the playoffs. You already had 10 wins. You're already automatically making the playoffs at that time. That falls back to 3 weeks ago.
Well, I mean, if we're gonna go that deep, I mean, Ryan Clark missing should be mentioned. And for me, I mean, I could see where you're going to Roethlisberger because no one said it yet. Roethlisberger's interception deep in Steeler territory, set up for one of the field goals. So there's two field goals already we pointed out. One there that the Broncos gained, one involving the sack by Doomerville that put Roethlisberger out of range right before the end of the game, after Roethlisberger tied it up. Being a freaking hero, it's hard for me to fault. It's hard for me to blame Roethlisberger's performance after throwing 300. How many yards did he have again? 289 yards. It's hard for me to fault him on that. And Isaac Redman ran like a man, like we've talked about him being able to do, going 121. It's hard for me to fault any of that. I think a lot of it is going to be strategic. Dick LeBeau, much to my shock, got out-coached on one particular play in overtime. Period. That's all there is to it. And then Ike Taylor got Christmas-treed yet again. First play of overtime. Peace, bye, see ya, ball game.
Here's another interesting stat. QB hits. Steelers defense, 0.
On a running quarterback, mind you.
Yeah.
Broncos defense, 6.
It's just weird that there was no holding calls. I know holding calls are subjective and all, but the thing is that there was nothing. I know they didn't call one for like
Emmanuel Sanders run or whatever with I think it was Wallace or Hines Ward or something. You can see the jersey stretch like 2 feet out from the Broncos. He's going down to the ground because the guy's holding his jersey.
I didn't say it was against one team.
There was some defensive holding, but I think Weasel's referring specifically to blocking. Yeah, but
it's always horrible.
Anyways, enough about that. Let us go to something a lot less horrible, which is the study hall that features the next week playoff games. We got some tough ones to pick here. Chris, catch us up.
All right, you went 2-2 yesterday. Me and Weasel went 3-1.
Catching up.
You picked the Texans. Yeah, you're still 6 games back. I'm 4 games back. There is only 7 games left to pick this year, and you're 6 games back.
You're not mathematically eliminated yet.
So it's up to you if you want to just say, screw it. I'm going all in and just say, Kylo always picks first anyway. And you're like, I'm going to go opposite the rest of the week, so I can try to win it.
So you can go kamikaze, or you can...
Or you can just try settling for second, because I'm going to be going...
I'm going to hit the century mark.
You could do what would be called...
He's got to take 2, and then he's like, all right, I'm done.
You could go for what we would call the Star Wars defense, where no matter what, I'm going to be number 1 in the box office compared to you. You're fighting for number 2. It could be. I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to call it a victory yet because I snuck up on you last year this time. I don't know if I was 4 back. I think I was 2 or 3, and we were co-champion by the end of the season. Yeah. So I'm going to talk that much crap because I know what I did last year. But with that aside, Chris, take us through it.
All right. Saints at Niners, 4:30 on Saturday.
This is ridiculously tough to pick until I remember Alex Smith is the quarterback, simply put. I like that the Niners did very good this year. I love that they did enough to host a playoff game, and it's going to suck when they lose the Battle of the Golden Helmet. I got the Saints.
I got the Saints, too. It's
okay, you're already ruining the strategy.
Whatever. My strategy is to pick games based on, you know, the specific week, not because of past predictions or anything.
A lot different than your strategy last year, and look what it got you. I'm just...
What, first place?
That's what I'm saying. No, you're failing now.
Not really.
I'm joking with you. No, we all went up significantly in percentage to last year. I'm just being silly. Chris?
I got I'm going to go with Saints on this one today. I don't know. I was thinking maybe Niners just go opposite of you on that, but...
That's a tough one. That means you're believing Niners in Alex Smith.
But Niners' run defense is really good, but...
Is the run defense really the issue here? I mean, their passing defense is pretty good.
Pretty good too.
They got two DBs in the Pro Bowl.
Right. I mean. So... you know what, screw it. I'll go with Niners.
Oh, boy.
I'll go with Niners. I'll go opposite.
That's okay. See, if
you... think about going two opposite this week, I'll go three. I'll go three this week.
If I'm wrong... trying to catch up. If I'm wrong, we both win, and it's okay.
Yeah.
Next game.
Broncos at Patriots.
Anybody?
I think it's... The thing about Tim Tebow is that if he gets protection, he gets good blocking.
Giggity.
And he can make a good pass, and he can make a really, really, really bad pass.
He can make a perfect pass, or he can make a really, really bad pass.
The only thing is, to do both, he needs time. And I think the Patriots, I know Dick LeBeau didn't really do it, but his team had a good number of injuries. So Patriots are pretty healthy. So I think they're going to disrupt Tebow. I think they're going to get at least like a forced fumble on him. So Patriots.
Okay, yeah, and a lot of that, too, to add to some of the analysis, Brian Dawkins missing as well at safety for the Broncos for this game. Eric Decker, we mentioned earlier, he's going to be out. And defense really being the issue. I don't know how much they hit Tebow until they were down big, but what I can tell you is defense struggled. Gronk, Welker, Hernandez, oh, my God. Chris?
I got the Patriots. I got, two things. One, Foxborough. Two, 41-23 was the one they played earlier in the season. Four weeks ago. That was at Denver, so.
Fair enough. Next game.
Texans at Ravens, Sunday at 1.
This is kind of ridiculous. Of course, the thing that I'm instantly reminded of is what made this game stop being close was the crowd involvement in Houston. Well, obviously, they won't have that in Baltimore. Beyond that, these teams are pretty darn similar. I got the Ravens. Chris.
Contrary.
Yeah. I was saying, I was going to take maybe three this week. And then that would have to be that one. The problem is with the Ravens play well at home. It's just what they...
Dude, they play down to their opponents. Right. Yeah. That's why it's a scary pick.
Toss up between TJ Yates or Flacco, who hasn't been performing very well this year.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, hey,
so,
Ray Rice or Arian Foster. No, that's both pretty good. Houston's D.
Houston's D versus the run, or the Ravens D versus the run.
Yeah, both are pretty solid, you know. Ed Reed or Andre Johnson, you know. Yeah, it's pretty rough, so.
Two this week. I have to take two next week.
You got to take them both next week.
If I take three this week, and then I might be out of it, and I might just say screw it. But, I'll just go with Texans again. They didn't fail me this past weekend.
Yeah, and as the one on the panel who correctly predicted them making the playoffs, let's see if you continue to do so here. Weasel.
I'll go with the Texans this week.
Contrarian!
Yeah.
We didn't go wrong last week.
Good call with the Texans too. Very interesting.
Giants at Pack, 4:30 on Sunday.
It's a good game.
This, for me, I mentioned the Baltimore game being tough. I didn't say the toughest. This game is pretty darn difficult. Because while record-wise, the Packers dominate the Giants, team-wise, they match up really well. This is how you're going to beat Aaron Rodgers, is with great defensive ends to come in and disrupt the hell out of the Packers in the backfield. Their running game is virtually non-existent. It's, you know, with the Saints, it's more they choose not to run. With the Packers, they really don't have anyone to run with. And then on top of that, Eli Manning damn near beat them last time they played. All that being said, I'm going to go with the numbers here and what I picked in August. I got the Packers. Chris.
I really thought you were going to go Giants.
Come on, Homer.
I really thought you were going Giants, man.
Come on, Homer.
I did think hard about it. I'm going opposite in this game, regardless what you pick anyway, so I'll go with Giants.
Homer.
But the only difference between last time, they lost by less than a touchdown.
What, it like two or three points?
Yeah, it was real, real short. But the difference in this game is Chad Clifton. He didn't play the first time they played against each other.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
So, He'll be back. They said he's starting. You never know about the injury. But, mm-hmm. I mean, how that Giants front seven's been playing, or not even front seven, just front four. You know, the linebackers are mediocre.
Let's just talk about the defensive end core and how they've been playing.
Giants did lose Aaron Ross, though. Maybe a concussion. They're not sure yet if he's going to be back, but they still got Webster and Akamura out there at corners, but, you know.
Prince Akamura. Doesn't he sound like something? Doesn't he sound like he could be the Eddie Murphy character in Coming to America instead of Prince of King? Prince Akamura. Right?
Yeah.
It rolls.
I thought you were talking about one of those princes that email you to try to save, you know.
Oh, yeah, right. One of the Nigerian princes. Yeah. Could be.
So I'll go with Giants because I said I was going to go three opposite this week. So
Weasel.
I hope I'm wrong. I'll go with the Pack.
Touching. Don't worry, I won't tell your fiance. It's gonna
be
okay.
I did actually pick the Pack to go to the championship Sunday again this year.
By the way, let's go. Yeah, who were your Super Bowl picks again, Weasel?
Well, I thought it. I never picked the Jets. I'll check the tape. Eagles.
I picked the Eagles.
You picked the Eagles, and who on the AFC side?
I don't know. I think it was the Patriots.
I thought it was the Jets.
I wouldn't pick the Jets.
No. I picked them last year.
No, I don't know. Maybe he did.
I know you picked the Eagles.
I picked Eagles-Patriots.
Yeah.
And I had Eagles win it.
I don't remember y'all two matching.
So, yeah. I don't kind of think we did match.
Okay. Yeah, well, I'll check it later. But, so, the Eagles both being out.
Yeah, that's the Patriots. But then you fall to my second place, who lost in the championship Sunday, which was Packers.
Okay. That's super. Yeah. Packers-Ravens on my list. It can happen. So, that could all change next week. And with that, wow, shorter episode with playoffs and whatever. That's okay, though. That doesn't mean we miss you guys any less. So please email us, thesotg@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, @thesotg. Check us out 4 o'clock for at least the next couple weeks. I'll be calling into WTMY.com with Tom Kernan on 1280 AM Sarasota. And also, I'm forgetting something. Oh, yeah, leave a comment on the webpage itself, www.thestoonofthegame.com, of course. At any rate, with no more questions, class dismissed.